Welcome to the Low Power Radio Podcast,
the podcast for the recreational broadcaster.
We'll talk about part 15, experimental and non-traditional approaches.
And now, here's the Low Power Radio guy.
Hi, good listener, and thank you so much for listening again. Welcome to Low Power Radio, the podcast for the recreational broadcaster. Last time, in episode 2, we talked about my early exploration into recreational broadcasting. I told you about how hobbyists learned more about electronics and how we bought parts and equipment in a flashback to the pre-internet era. Today, I'll tell you about how I got ready to make radio for the first time. I'll tell you all about setting up my first transmitter, what I learned, what I chose, what I used, and what happened, all coming up in episode 3. Before we get started on this episode, please remember that this is your podcast too. You can use our low-power radio hotlines anytime to ask questions, share comments, and make this podcast more useful to everyone. Call 360-474-7262 or send an email to lowpowerradio@gmail.com. And if you didn't catch that, the phone number and email address are in our show notes on our podcast page at theinimitablepodomatic.com. And now back to episode 3, where I make radio for the first time. Using the sources we discussed in episode 2, magazines, small kit makers, and the library, I learned just enough to think that maybe, just maybe, I could make radio. To be fair, I had been an electronics experimenter for quite some time, although my success rate was running at about 20%. One out of every 5 projects actually worked. I had a few real winners, projects that created useful items that I used quite a bit, and many, many failures. I frequently inadvertently confirmed the myth that all electronics run on smoke, because when I let the smoke out, those electronics quit working. For this reason, I was already familiar with magazines that covered electronics, and many of my failed and successful projects came from the pages of those very magazines. Refocused on radio, I visited several magazine articles that reviewed transmitter kits authorized under Part 15 of FCC regulation, and I liked what I saw. Using ads I found in the magazines, I sent away for 3 booklets on low-power radio. Have booklets you can see for yourself by following the links in the show notes. I also requested catalogs from several vendors in case I needed to source components. Those 3 booklets really helped me get my head around low-power radio and inspired me to keep going. I visited the library and made a few photocopies of older magazine articles and some technical information like resistor color band codes, capacitor markings, and transistor substitutions, the kind of information we get with search engines today. With all that reading, I slowly learned what was available and what my options were, based on what I found using those old-school content delivery systems. Even then, there was a wide variety of sources and resellers for electronic kits, from the well-known and reputable to those bordering on the fly-by-night. Back in 1989, I could mail-order pirate radio gear from a shortwave transmitter circuit board with a parts list all the way up to a complete ready-to-assemble 30-watt FM kit from good old Free Radio Berkeley. Yep, in 1989, shortwave was still a thing, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that a little later, if we have time. Another outfit, Pan Access Communications, or PanCom, as they were sometimes known, offered quite an array of all kinds of transmitter kits and an assembled Part 15 unit, too. Free Radio Berkeley and Pan Access would play a role in my future, but we'll cover that in upcoming episodes. There were also a couple of button-down Part 15 kits, AM and FM units from Vectronics, North Country Radio, and the now-defunct Ramsey Electronics that followed the letter of the law precisely. At that time, there were 2 reseller outlets offering pre-assembled AM transmitters. One was called a talking sign, the other a talking house. The 1989 talking house was no relation to the current talking house model transmitter from IAM, a pretty good unit in its own right. Those old 1980 units consisted of the marriage of a Part 15 compliant AM transmitter and a cassette player. Both had a poor reputation due to the frequent failure of the tape transport and the unstable nature of the transmitter section. An emerging company on Rhode Island offered a matched pair of pre-assembled synchronized low-power AM transmitters, complete with instructions for configurations that would deliver maximum range permitted for unlicensed transmitters. One of the more unusual approaches came from a company in Nevada that offered an array of multiple low-power FM transmitters receiving audio from a low-power shortwave transmitter. At this point, I really wasn't ready to put out the kind of money any of these options required at the time. Hard to believe today, but there was a time when electronics were relatively expensive. After all that book learning, it was time to start a project. What did I want for my first effort? First, I had to choose from AM, FM, or shortwave. Which band had the most open frequencies? Which would be more likely to be tuned in? What kind of antenna would I need? Then there was the low power aspect. How low should I go? 100 milliwatts? 1 watt? 5 watts? Then I had to decide how I would get the transmitter. Buy a ready-built unit? kits, plans, or parts. After I had a transmitter, what would I transmit? Weather reports, a talk show, live, or pre-recorded? Did I need a microphone or a tape recorder? Would I use automation? Well, what did I choose and what did I do? Find out in just a moment after this.
We'll be right back.
The baking element in our stove burned out last November, and you can imagine how my wife felt about that, what with a whole holiday baking season coming up. Fortunately, I already knew about A1 appliance parts, so I hopped online and found the part we needed, and even found some great installation help on the A1 repair blog. My wife was happy. I ate far too much during yet another holiday season, and our landlord even reimbursed us for the cost of the part. Whether it's a holiday baking emergency, a washer, dryer, or dishwasher crisis, or if you need to replace something in your rental so you can get your deposit back, A1 Appliance Parts is here to help. Just use the link to A1 Appliance Parts in our show notes. Visit A1 Appliance Parts and start repairing your home appliances the fast and easy way with parts and help from A1 Appliance Parts.
We're back, and here's the Low Power Radio Guy.
Thank you, robots. Welcome back to Low Power Radio, the podcast for the recreational broadcaster. We were just talking about the decisions I was making to start making radio, but first, I need to make good on a promise I made earlier in this episode. It's quite possible that most people listening to this podcast have never heard of this thing called shortwave. Shortwave radio used amplitude modulation, or AM, in much higher frequencies than today's AM broadcast band. Transmitting at frequencies between 3,500 kHz and 26,000 kHz, these operations could reach global audiences. Not because of power, but because signals at those frequencies bounce off an upper atmospheric layer and return to Earth rather than continuing in a straight line out into space. This bounce effect increases range by thousands of miles. Shortwave was used for all kinds of communication purposes before transoceanic cables and satellites took over. One set of frequencies was popular with unlicensed operations, and some shortwave pirates still operate today. Ask Granddad to get the shortwave radio out of the attic, and you can still tune in those pirates. On shortwave, the most common frequencies to check for pirates in North America is 6,800 to 7,000 kHz. There are a couple of low-power radio enthusiasts who use an unlicensed allocation at the 13,500 kHz mark in shortwave. Low-power shortwave is a very interesting opportunity because the FCC regulations for that band allow for much greater range, a range of a mile or more, easily done with a simple antenna. Too bad no one owns a shortwave receiver anymore. You can't very well build an audience when no one has the radio needed to listen to your signal. Links to information about low-power shortwave are in the show notes, taking you to some articles on our blog, lowpowerradio.blogspot.com. Speaking of shortwave, we have a listener question on that very topic, a question sent to lowpowerradio@gmail.com. A person who calls themselves Programmer asked how feasible it would be to create shortwave radio transmitters to relay internet radio to other countries. Is it possible, they asked, to design and build a shortwave radio transmitter that would cover 2 to 4 miles that would be relatively inexpensive? The answer is yes, and that's a really interesting approach to syndication. Many people still have no access to the internet, and even if they did, might not be able to afford a PC or smartphone to access the web. These same people, and we're talking about people overseas, might have an inexpensive shortwave radio receiver. There's a link in the show notes to plans for just this kind of transmitter. So back to me, what did I choose to start my journey as a recreational broadcaster? On that fateful day that was now in 1991, I decided that I would start my journey with a very low-power AM transmitter that I would build myself. I found and fell in love with a schematic in Cunningham's low-power radio broadcasting book, a simple but robust little circuit that I felt would be well within my rather meager building skills. The circuit I chose used off-the-shelf parts, common transistors, and a simple power supply. The low-power output would keep me out of trouble while I was getting started, and the total cost, including an aluminum project box, was under $30. I filled in the order forms in the backs of the catalogs I decided to use, mailed off my order with payments, and started the 3 to 5 week waiting period we put up with back then when mail order was king. Bit by bit, the parts trickled in, with a couple of items on back order, you know, just to make the wait more painful. Finally, the day came when I had everything I needed to build my first transmitter. My palms were a little sweaty, and I reviewed a few articles on building radio frequency circuits, the kinds that tell you to keep the lead short, keep amplifying components like transistors away from noise-generating components like transformers, and keep the circuit board free of excess solder and flux puddles. That was my DJ name, Flux Puddles. I really took my time in putting together this first effort. I spent a week's worth of after-work sessions just laying out the parts, another week setting up my little assembly plant, and a third week doing the actual soldering. After lots of careful detail work, quite a few flubs, desoldering my mistakes and frying a couple of the more sensitive components, and I had ordered extras because I know my history, my little transmitter began to take shape. After some painstaking double-checking, a couple of repairs, and a rubbing alcohol washdown to clean off the excess flux, I would mount my little creation into its aluminum box and call it done. I was definitely going to do some kind of automated programming, so I used an auto-reverse cassette player I had in my apartment and a 15-minute cassette to reduce wear and tear on the player. I didn't have a microphone, but one of my failed projects did have a surviving Electret condenser mic cartridge, so I scavenged that, added a current-limiting resistor, and a high-frequency cutoff non-polarized electrolytic capacitor. I soldered up a battery holder, wrapped the whole mess in foam padding, and stuffed it into a cardboard tube. The result, combined with the narrow audio bandwidth of the cassette, was surprisingly serviceable, and very much in contrast with my usual ad hoc project outcome. No smoke. I recorded 15 minutes of test content, reversed the cassette, and recorded the other side of the tape, too. Next, I gathered up my patch cords and connected the audio tape to the transmitter audio input section. I connected the power cables and 10-foot of wire to the antenna, pushed play on my recorder, and flicked the power switch on the transmitter. What happened? Well, we're all out of time for today, so you'll have to listen to Episode 4 to find out how it all turned out. In Episode 4... I'll be bringing you up to date on what happened when I put the power to the transmitter. But in the meantime, when you visit our blog, lowpowerradio.blogspot.com, that's lowpowerradio.blogspot.com, and if you feel like you might want to buy something on Amazon, please use our Amazon link at the top of the page. When you use our link, you pay the same price you always would, and we get a reward from Amazon, a reward that helps us pay for our podcast bandwidth. And looking at our bandwidth, I think we've used up about all the bandwidth available for this episode, so let's take a look at what's coming up in our next episode, Episode 4. Next time, as we dive into Episode 4, you'll find out what happened when I powered up my first transmitter. Would I make radio, or would I just make more smoke? Find out what happened, and if I got that signal out, all coming up on Episode 4. Until then, thank you very much for listening, and of course, always remember and never forget that this is your podcast too. You can use our low-power radio hotlines anytime by calling 360-474-7262 or sending an email to lowpowerradio@gmail.com. Ask questions, share comments, and make this podcast more useful to everyone. You can find our phone number and email addresses in the show notes found in the inimitable Podomatic.com. Search Low Power Radio on Podomatic.com. So that's it for today. We'll see you next time in Episode 4. And until then, get out there and make some radio.
Music licensed for commercial reuse courtesy of partners in Rhyme.com.
Licensed interstitial music comes from JewelBeat.com.
SoundBible.com provides our sound effects.
Robot announcers are a service of text-to-speech.org.
A free service licensed for commercial use.